Please, we are in a great hurry.
Passepartout?
Yes.
In French.
Chacun bleu, la champagne, château, bien, bonsoir, voilà, oulala, faut dire quoi?
T'as l'air malin, toi.
Welcome to Exposition Street, a prismatic film cast exploring geek movies in all their splendiferous glory. Thank you very much for joining us today. My name is Eric, and we are here to take another stab at bringing you another film that we are really excited to talk about to various degrees, I think, as usual. And we're going to spend the next hour or so doing that. So I hope you enjoy the show. It's been a little time with this. We're going to go ahead and introduce the panel. If I can find the panel. Wow, this is going swimmingly this morning. To my left, here comes Mr. Grumpy and the Leatherettes. It's Richard.
You had me at the nipples.
She's definitely the 11th tiger. Hashtag ninjas being ninja-ing. It's Vanessa.
Meow.
He's just the obstruction blocking the Jade Reserves. It's Jason.
I like that.
And it's a half-naked Chinese man with a cow skull on his head singing Frère Jacques. It's the kid.
As usual.
Today we're going to talk about Around the World in 80 Days. This is currently available on Disney Plus. It was produced by an indie film company that Disney picked up along the way, and it's out there. It was released in June of 2004. Shot to number 9 at the box office when it came out. $10.3 million in its opening weekend.
Do not make the mistake I did. This has nothing to do with the book by Jules Verne. Absolutely nothing.
No.
That's not entirely true. I mean, not 100% true. It's about 98% true. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Just to put it in perspective, it was beat its opening weekend. Dodgeball, the true underdog story, came out the same weekend and took the top of the box office.
Oh, that's sad.
I will admit, that's the one I saw.
The Terminal, the Tom Hanks film, came out that same weekend as well and was the number 2 take. Harry Potter 3 was still in there. You know, it was the third week. These are all ones that...
That's probably what I was seeing.
These are all ones that beat it. I just want you guys to know. Shrek 2 was in its fifth week. The Garfield movie, Garfield, was in its second week. The Chronicles of Riddick was still in the theater. The Stepford Wives was still in the theater. The Day After Tomorrow had been in the theater for 4 weeks and still beat Around the World in 80 days.
That's because those are all better.
There's a lot
movies.
Of really good movies there, just saying.
Rated PG, runtime of 2 hours. I wasn't making any commentary. I just was sharing some information I found interesting.
Fair enough.
To win a bet, let me get this right. This is from IMDb. To win a bet, an eccentric British inventor, beside his Chinese valet, and an aspiring French artist, embarks on a trip full of adventures and dangers around the world in exactly 80 days. Directed by Frank Caratti, did The Waterboy, did The Wedding Singer. He's got a few credits, we know. And writing credit went to David Titcher, did the screenplay. About all that he's known for is the Librarian movies and the series, which he's a producer on. And David Benullo, who had nothing that I knew on his resume. And, of course, Jules Verne got a writing credit for some reason. We're not entirely sure why, but it's there. Maybe it was the title. They used the title. They had to use the name, right? It's not like it was still in the public domain.
There was a balloon.
There was a balloon. And there's something I've got to ask real quick. Is anybody actually read the novel? Just curious.
Several times.
Show of hands. Several times? Okay. Was that several hands? I couldn't see. Now, I know I did a little bit of research. Tiny, tiny bit of research. It wasn't worth a ton of research. The character of Phileas Fogg was the main character in Around the World in 80 Days.
Although it was a different Phineas Fogg.
Right, right, right. And Passepartout was a French guy.
Yes, not a Chinese guy, an actual French guy.
Jackie Chan said he was a French guy.
Right.
On his mother's side. No, his mother is Chinese.
On his father's side, yeah.
On his father's side, that's right.
But his father never spoke. Okay.
Same thing.
And his mother spoke all the time.
So they picked up her accent.
I must commend the valet service on their impeccable foresight. But they know I only accept French valets.
Yes. Ah, oui, oui. I come from a long line of French valets. On my father's side, very, very French.
But your accent?
My father French, never speak. My mother Chinese and never shuts up. All the children pick up her accent.
Wow. Okay. There is a minor quibble before I get into anything else that I have with this movie, and that clip right there exemplifies it beautifully. And I want to talk about this because I know there's a couple of people at this virtual table right now who really liked this movie. And I'm not really saying yet whether I'm one of them. I just want to kind of touch on one little thing. A lot of the jokes, and Jackie's a funny guy. He's really good at being funny. A lot of the jokes fell a little flat, and it had something to do with the pacing of the scene, I think. I just kind of want to frame that for your, you know, thought construct as we kind of move into the discussion, because I really think that the script wasn't missing the point on those jokes. It was something about the way that the cut was, or the way that, you know, that's the delivery we're using. I'm sure you did 8 other cuts and that's the one we chose. Maybe not the best choice, but I like Jackie, so, you know, it's not a heavy criticism there. Starring Jackie Chan, played Passepartout. I can't remember his actual character's actual name in this.
Lao Xing.
This was, let's see, 2004, right? So this was right after he had just done The Medallion. He just did Shanghai Nights with Owen Wilson, which, you know, we saw a little Owen Wilson in this. Owen and Luke, actually. This was like the first time they ever appeared in a movie together. It was for a cameo. I thought that was great.
Very briefly, but yes. Owen and
Luke Wilson. Playing brothers, no less. Steve Coogan as Mr. Phileas Fogg. I knew when I saw him, and I'd seen this movie before. This wasn't my first viewing. Although, to be honest, I didn't remember hardly anything, as it turns out. But I knew Steve Coogan from somewhere. I mean, you see him and he looks familiar. And I was able to track down a couple places I know him from, but either the movies that, or the places I knew him from were obscure, or the role that he had in the movie was kind of obscure. So it wasn't really worth kind of dissecting. The only place where people might remember him from, he was in he was in the one with the museum, Night at the Museum, as like one of the exhibits that came to life, obviously.
I get him and Russell Brand confused because they look a lot alike, but that's me.
There's a little similarity there, isn't there? Yeah.
The facial structure. Facial structure, very similar, in my opinion.
And Cécile de France played Monique Laroche, and I mean, she just did a bunch of French stuff. I don't really know her from anywhere, so I think
her last name is actually de France. Yeah.
At least on her SAG card, so to speak. I don't think I have anything else there for main characters. Jim Broadbent is the other kind of big one. And Jim Broadbent was doing an amazing Jim Broadbent. I mean, he did what he does best.
Which character was that?
He played Lord Kelvin, our primary antagonist.
He did so good with that role.
Oh, he did.
He overacts like it's nobody's business and does it so great.
Yeah, I just saw him in something else not too long ago, and it was pretty much like watching the same character, only not evil.
My favorite role of his is probably Moulin Rouge, where he plays Ziegler, which is a very, very, you know, extravagant character. It's just personality all over the place. He was in the Chronicles of Narnia. He was the professor in that. So that was like the year after this. So he was doing his thing.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah. other than that, just mostly a chain of cameos, with the exception of, Ian McNeice, who played Colonel Kitchener, appeared in several scenes, and he was Churchill in Doctor Who, various episodes and seasons of Doctor Who in the latter years.
Right. He was also in No Escape.
Oh, really? I don't remember that. I mean, I remember
he was he was the traitor on the island.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I can picture it. Been a while. That's a good movie.
So good. Great movie.
Ray Liotta, wasn't it?
Yes.
Intense. And Ewan Bremner as Inspector Fix, who Jason noticed right before we went on, was Spud in Trainspotting, which is the first place I remember him from. I've seen him in a few other things over the years, but wow, was he a character in this. I think Fix was my favorite character in this.
He's my vote for MVC, just saying.
Nailed it. Called it. As soon as you said, I know who my MVC is, I was like, it's Inspector Fix.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And
yes, it is.
You guys, I mean, you're welcome to, I know we had a bunch of cameos in here. I mean, we could talk about them if you want to. Kathy Bates was well cast as Queen Victoria. That was fantastic.
Why do they
we
always
have to
run?
Talk about Prince Happy?
No, absolutely. We do. But let's, I think I'm, you know, I didn't get away from this without a clip of Prince Happy. Yeah, I did. I got one.
I would hope you did.
So we can come to that a little later, I guess.
Half of the clippable parts of the movie were Prince Happy.
Box office, $110 million, the estimated budget. Opening weekend, we already covered that. It didn't make a bunch. $24 million gross, $72 million worldwide, with a box office loss of around $38 million worldwide, plus prints, advertising, distribution. The movie is considered the biggest independent released flop in movie history. So, and like I said, Disney has it now, so... that's what I got, ladies and gentlemen.
Every now and then, you look at the world and you realize that sometimes they still get it right.
Around the World in 80 Days. Who wants to start?
I enjoyed it.
I know you did. Just,
it's a movie that came out at a time period where I would have enjoyed it anyways. I was still in high school. I liked it.
Yeah, and this is by all intents and all fashions. While it has the remarkable journey of maybe a Jules Verne movie, that's where it loses, it disconnects after that. It is, by all purposes and means, a pure Jackie Chan movie, straight up.
Just in Jules Verne clothing?
Well, that's Victorian. So,
well, one of the notes I made for it, and I realized that Jules Verne stories, they typically were pretty straightforward adventure stories. But one of the notes I made for was that the side plot on this is better than the real plot. You know, just the whole thing with the Jackie's village and the Jade Buddha and
all the plots well mixed. And I enjoyed the way they did. And I thought also, as far as they explored so many different cultures in the time set, honestly, I think they did a lot of good service to the cultures on their way through, still building on stereotypes, because that's what you do in a comedy. But I think they still represented well.
Very tropey, yeah. I like the stuff in Paris with the art museum and all that, just because the feel of it felt very Parisian somehow, yeah.
It did, but I will say in Paris, the one thing that got on my nerves, and I don't know, maybe it's just because it hit me weird, or maybe because at this point, I've seen way too much of it, but the little joke where... oh my gosh, how do I blank out on his name? Starry Night.
Oh, Picasso? Van Gogh.
Of course, it's Van Gogh. Van Gogh looks up and goes, what? With a bandage on his ear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. No. But I mean, I enjoyed so much of the rest going on. And of course, Jackie Chan, all the fighting, wonderfully scripted, well done. And of course, he presents well because he does all his own fighting stunts. So.
Now, to be fair, and a couple of kind of querulous kind of points there with you, Rich. I kind of wonder. And I know you enjoyed this movie. You actually said that you watched it like three times because
I have at this point.
Because we had a week's delay getting to it because of a cancellation last week. So it's like you watched it a third time. And I'm like, that's an impressive amount of dedication. Obviously, you enjoyed watching it.
I almost never rewatch movies.
I also
can't
know.
Can't tell you how many times I've seen this one.
That's fair. I also know that you are not really in it for the fight scenes, typically. So it's obviously the comedy that you like.
I'm not, but the timing of the fight was interesting, fun to watch, and there was a bit of the comedy in the fighting, which is a hallmark of the Jackie Chan movie. Yeah.
It's what he does.
Beautifully choreographed without being graphic, without being bloody.
Those are the two big things with Jackie Chan. Very typical, yeah. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like watching Jackie. I've always liked him. Yeah. I mean, he's arresting, and he's become a better actor as he got older, too. I mean, this, of course, was 15 really? Years ago. But, I mean, really, he's definitely he's grown, you know, as a in his craft, as more than just somebody that flips around weird obstacles and puts things in people's way while they're trying to punch him and looks funny doing it. His expression, he is so expressive. I remember the first Jackie Chan movie I saw because I'd heard the name. Here's an interesting bit of funny. The first time I heard his name, because I knew nothing about, you know, Hong Kong cinema or, you know, Chinese movies, any of that, martial arts movies, they weren't on my, what's the term?
Radar?
Yeah, at all. You know, the first time I remember hearing his name was in Demolition Man when Stallone asks, Sandy Bullock's character, you know, where she learned to fight, and she said Jackie Chan movies. I was like, okay, you know. And then Rumble in the Bronx came out like a year or two later. It was released in the U.S. And I was floored. We watched that. Kid and I were living together when that came out, and I just enjoyed the hell out of that sitting there watching. And that was a comic movie full of all that martial arts fun. And with that kind of exaggerated acting style, whatever, where everything was so, you know, quick and, you know, quick cut and overacted with all the reactions from people in the neighborhood and stuff. And then, you know, the next few movies he came out with, I just kind of like, whatever. So it wasn't until he got into doing like Rush Hour and stuff like that, where, you know, Shanghai Noon, where it just was blatant comedy, where he was really building chemistry with somebody else. And that's where he started to shine. And I just have loved everything I've seen him do since.
But yeah, and I mean, you know, I talk about doing service to cultures, and you talk about the strength of the sub-stories. One of the things that ended up impressing me while I was watching the movie the first time, I'm sitting here, you know, they pull out this Buddha, and I'm like talking about needing to get back to the village. And I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to look up that pose, because I do, you know, I have collected Buddhas. And I look up the pose, and it's got the open hand with the four fingers pointing up to the heavens.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's the fearlessness mudra. And it represents both fearlessness and protection.
Oh, cool.
That was the Jade Buddha that they wanted back in the center of the town for protection, mostly because it probably gives them, you know, the strength to be able to protect themselves.
I was totally going to look up what that symbol meant, because I know that the different poses and hand gestures mean different things, and I had every intention of looking it up, so I'm super glad you did.
Yeah, Abhaya or something like that. I'm not a cultural expert for Chinese anything, I guarantee that. But I do respect it, and it really felt like it was doing more than just making fun of it. It felt like it was actually incorporating it, and I don't know how much of that was Jackie or how much the writers may have actually looked into it, or a little bit of both. But I thought that was really cool.
Now, there was a like a 1950s, 50s, 60s, Around the World in 80 Days, right? A classic movie I've never seen.
I haven't seen the old one. It is weird.
It is a classic.
I'm guessing it's more, well, I mean, they weren't necessarily truer to the books back then either, but I'm guessing it was a more traditional approach to the story.
Probably
was a much closer rendition than this one, considering this one wasn't even making an effort.
You say closer, but it was a low bar, so
it couldn't have. Yeah, I don't think it could have been further.
So, I guess the question I have then is for you, Kit. Is, I mean, you talk about that the way the movie is completely unrelated to the book. Is the spirit of it in the same spirit, do you feel?
In a kind of abstract way, I'd say yes, it very much is. Because a lot of Verne's work, and I'm sure people who've, you know, read anything of his would say that that's omnipresent, is very much the wanting to explore the world, the things that either his creativity or that were actually present in his world in that time, and bring them to the people of his culture. And this movie definitely embraces that, you know, just as Rich was saying, you know, the way they depicted all the various cultures as you go flying through the world. It was very much in the spirit of Jules Verne. They were very lackadaisical with their approach to his interest in the sciences, other than the fact that Phineas Fogg was at least in concept a scientist.
An inventor or something, right?
If of the mad variety. But yes, it has at least the spirit of the original novel. And I have to say, I'll go ahead and throw this out there. I found this movie highly inspiring, very enjoyable. I recommend it to everyone. I did not start from that viewpoint because I walked into it expecting an adaptation of the Jules Verne novel. And we hadn't even gotten to anything that's mentioned in the novel before I realized that I was wrong. That was not what I was here for. And so I could have just completely bagged on the movie for that. But by the time Jackie Chan had done his magic for a little bit, I was like, you know what? I don't care. This is a fun movie. And as I got through the movie and we saw various scenes that were at least vaguely reminiscent of scenes from the novel, I really appreciated the fact that they had taken a novel I loved and turned it into an almost completely different story, or at least interwoven a completely different story into it, and created a very enjoyable, fracas, kind of lighthearted thing that I don't feel took anything away from Jules Verne's novel. It certainly added a lot to it. and I very, very much enjoyed the end result. And I have to say at least 60% of that is Mr. Chan, whom I love. But the rest of it was really the work of just the entire studio and what they were creating here.
I find it interesting the choices that were made because it nowadays, whenever you see a story that's Victorian era, you know, especially English, you know, London, and you have an inventor or anybody that's got that bent, it starts to go steampunky. That's kind of the kind of the pattern now. And I noticed there really wasn't any of that here, despite the fact that he was creating machines. I mean, there were elements that remind you of it, but...
It felt pretty steampunky to me.
But they were the exception, not the rule. They were around things he was creating, not things that society were using.
And not doing successfully, necessarily.
Right. Society even resisted it specifically.
Well,
you can't take that carriage here because every carriage now must be pulled by a horse.
Right, right. So, I mean, his actual journey was, I mean, what? They were all traditional, pretty much, I mean, unusual maybe, but traditionally powered things until the thing that he built at the end. Am I right? I mean, I can't remember how they started.
Right.
Yes. Did they start with a, because they didn't get on the balloon, did they initially?
No, they started on a train. Perry.
Started on a train, then got on a balloon.
And then a boat.
Anyway.
Was it a boat or another train after that?
Another train.
Well,
that's right.
For a Victorian setting, considering relatively little of the movie actually takes place in England, I felt that that might have been, I don't know, I don't want to say a dodge, but you don't see a lot of Victorian era stuff outside of England. And I felt
Wild West, I guess.
Which, you know, most people don't think of that as taking place during the Victorian era for various reasons.
Right.
But I felt they did a really good job of giving us a look at where the rest of the world was around that point in time. And to me, that was fascinating. I really appreciate that simply because you don't see it a lot.
Well, that is the point, obviously, of the story. I mean, everything else, like you pointed out, a lot of what he did was speculative, totally speculative. From the Earth to the Moon, Journey to the Center of the Earth, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, was that his? I
mean, yes.
It's all very, very science fiction for his time, the Time Machine. Yeah, which did a far future, you know. It was, this was very much more grounded in the world, but probably not the world that people knew when he wrote it, right? It wasn't, you know, people, it was all about adventure. This was the same period in which people were writing and telling stories, adventure stories of Western gunfighters and of, like, you know, adventurers who went into the deepest, darkest heart of Africa and, you know, all these places where nobody knew the world, really. If they weren't anywhere near it. So it wasn't too, I think, too far of a stretch to think that he'd write about, you know, a story that you visited cultures in the East and in the Far East. And but, it, you know, it was fine. And then and got around to San Francisco, went across America. I mean, that was, you know, kind of a cool representation of the era. But I really don't know. They weren't exactly shooting for accuracy here. They were shooting for flavor, right? I mean, like when you visited, was it Turkey and then, I mean, India? I mean, obviously France before that, China. It was more about the feel of it than anything, which is probably pretty conversant with what the source material would have been like anyway. I'm just giving it the benefit of the doubt there, but I just find it interesting. Jason, you're about falling asleep over there. You got anything you want to add?
You finding it interesting is more than I had for the bulk of the film.
I'm trying here.
No, I'm... Oh. I did not enjoy this film. The only thing that I got out of this film was a few cool Jackie Chan fights. That was about it. I didn't like the subplots. I didn't like the script. I didn't like the jokes. I didn't think they were funny. I thought that it was droll and boring and needless, with the fact that almost all of the contraptions and such that he used to get from one side of the planet to the other were very, very traditional. If it had not been for the fact that people were cheating and other people were idiots, all you would have had to do to figure out how to go around the world in 80 days is see a travel agent.
Yeah. Another thing that it really...
You take this train,
really didn't
you take
illustrate.
This boat, you take this train, you take this boat. Okay, and you're going to be... They would have been around the world in 72 days if they had just gone straight through and hadn't had to worry about ships breaking and missing flights and not missing flights, but missing trains and the train being stopped and getting taken into the palace by the guy and having to rescue the girl from the palace. And then, you know, and then having to go the long way around into China specifically because all of the British owned groups were now thinking that they were a thief and were going to arrest them on sight, if not worse. So it's just like, really? This is the thing? And
I gotta admit, that's not the kind of thing that usually bothers me. And I wouldn't have contextualized it the way you're talking about it, but it did get me that the challenge seemed to be this disbelief that he could make it around the world in 80 days. And I didn't see him really doing anything extraordinary to get there. And that last bit wouldn't have had to be extraordinary if he'd been on time, just like you said.
And
so it's like, why didn't they believe it?
There were still delays.
But here's the other thing. The last thing that was extraordinary, he didn't even have to do that because they forgot about the international dateline and they would have made it with 20 hours to spare, even without the flying plane.
You realize when I watch this movie, right, that last time they're on the boat and they're like moving it ahead one more time zone and I'm like, oh, wait, did they pull back a day when they crossed the dateline?
Right.
So when we get to the end of the movie and the reveal comes along and I'm like, okay, the movie's not close to owning and they're over and they're not defeated. I bet you they didn't back off for the dateline and then that's what comes about.
There's a lot of foreshadowing.
I thought it was beautiful.
And see, you think it was beautiful and I'm happy for you and your enjoyment of this film, but man, it pissed me off. This guy's supposed to be one of the smartest people. He's supposed to be amazingly clever. And the fact that they didn't have issues with the date, they forgot about the dateline. They were all stressed. They sat there for God knows how long doing God knows what. The telegrams got around faster than they did.
Telegrams are going to. That's the way telegrams work.
It just seemed as though they were the slowest people on the planet.
But in my experience, the smartest people forget the silliest things.
Sure.
Yeah,
they do put a big focus on that. Because, I mean, there's a lot of things that he should have noticed a lot earlier than he did. Jackie Chan is not French.
But he had that absent-minded inventor type style character.
He was distracted and silly, and it was a thing, and I just, woof. I almost didn't finish this film.
Wow.
I stopped about an hour through. I stopped when they were getting ready to go into China, and I'm like, I have to go to bed because I'm falling asleep. And the next morning, I'm like, do I really want to finish this? I don't want to finish this. I almost didn't watch a movie for the first time in this show.
Wow.
I am as close to being on Team Jason as I think I'm ever going to be. I do not agree with his assessment because it wasn't something I hated and would never, you know, would want scrubbed from my brain. But I found it boring. I was watching this movie thinking, I remember when Vanessa suggested it, I was like, oh, I've seen this before, right? I couldn't remember anything about it. And that's weird for me. Really weird. I mean, and I remember thinking, God, it's a Jackie Chan film. I remember that much. It's got to be a fun film. It's an adventure story. And I'm watching through the first half of the movie, I was bored. And the thing I was talking about earlier with like the jokes not falling, you know, it seemed like every time, and I listened to it and think they're on the right path, but there's something that's just not, like I said, just not falling right, just not hitting right. You know, choices that are being made. And I couldn't find anything to laugh at. Now, that being said, the moment, let me think. I've got a clip for it right here.
For many centuries, the Jay Buddha has protected my people. He has never left our village until now.
And those are thieves. Who are they?
The Black Scorpions. They work for an evil warlord, Fang. She wants the Buddha so she can take over my village. I must return to Jay Buddha to protect Lanzhou. Mr. Fo is the fastest way.
I want to say it was contrast, but that made the movie about 20% more interesting to me. And then the actual point at which they show up in China at his village, the movie got better. And from that point forward, I didn't hate it. I wasn't bored. But the best part of the movie, hands down, in my opinion, was in the village in China. The characters were great. The other characters were fun. The old woman who wouldn't stop drinking and the toasting and
his
stuff.
His mother? Yeah.
all of that was good. The fight with the black scorpions. I mean, it just was, it was ridiculous and it was fun and it was lighthearted and fun in a way that made me enjoy what was going on. And, you know, of course, it's, again, a lot of the Jackie Chan kind of class, but it was more than that. Like I said, it was the side characters. It was the way Phileas was interacting with them without even knowing what any of them were talking about. Even the point of drama they had in there when he realized Passepartout was lying to him, you know, I thought all that really timed out well. I thought that stuff hit right. And after that point, there were points in the movie that I looked at and went, they did that well. I like that part. Some of the stuff in San Francisco I thought was good. The Wright brothers thing I thought was funny. Rob Schneider, I never like him in anything. So seeing him just kind of made me, but I've met the guy and, you know, I have an opinion. So it's like...
I did not like that character, but I get where it was going.
And the cameos were fun. I mean, they did it, like I said, the cameos were fun. But
and the Wilson brothers playing the Wright brothers.
Yeah, it was good. Whatever.
In Arizona, though, that still got me, but whatever.
But even like the fight towards the end, though, when they were trying to get to the ship on time and the lady and her henchman showed up, I just was bored. It didn't hit me right, you know. So I'm not with Jason, but Jason, this is as close we're going to get to be on the same team, because I bet you everybody else here liked this movie better than you or I.
I believe that. And that's okay. One other thing I will have to say, I did enjoy the bit in the village. That was a fun scene, but there was so much more movie than that. And this is another one that, in my opinion, does not benefit from being a 2-hour film.
I would even agree with that.
Some movies need to be 90-minute movies, and this is one of them.
It kind of felt like maybe the director felt like it needed to be wrong to get that around the world in 80 days feeling out of it. Because there seemed to be a lot of quiet space in it. And not that they used it poorly. Some of it
was... There was a lot of quiet space in it, because most of the movie was uneventful.
Well, and like I said, I wasn't even able to get a lot of clips, because, I mean, a lot of the good stuff, good moments and stuff... were during the action sequences where it was impossible to clip it. That being said,
clips.
I do have a few that I'd really like to play if you guys are amenable.
Yep, let's do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Nobody's really mad at me for dogging on the movie a little bit, which I realize I just never do. So, you know, I just don't want to mess up anybody's expectations. I feel like the visuals held up nicely. I mean, I realized it was only 17 years ago, but visually, especially given the fact that it was kind of an independent film company. Yeah, $100 million is still a lot to put into a movie in 2004. So I think that they did a really good job with a lot of it. The sets were nice. Everything had kind of an abstract, you know, adventure-y kind of real feel to it that I think was supposed to be, you know, couched in the same kind of visual language that you want in a Jackie Chan film. I caught this sound because of some of the sound design. And by the way, the score was done by Trevor Jones. This man's good. He did A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, From Hell, Dark City, Labyrinth. He did some really great films, and the score in this was good. I have no problems with the music. David Stewart also got some credits on it for some of the songs on here. Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics, David Stewart. So I mean, that was kind of cool. I just thought that was a neat little bit of trivia there. But some of the sound design though, like I caught this, the Sounds of Progress, I called it, just because I had to share. Is that machine at the beginning? You guys remember that? Broadbenton. Well, he's Broadbenton. He's enunciating. This is what he does well.
Needless to say, the Royal Academy of Science declared this crackpot mentally incompetent, and he was duly dispatched to a lunatic asylum.
I love the way he talks.
That one.
Meanwhile,
was...
he plays with the slinky the rest of the movie.
Yes. At one point, they go into the office. He's actually humming the slinky song. He's playing with it. So bad. Yes. Well, I hear him talk, and I'm immediately taken back to like Ziegler or like Cloud Atlas. His performance in Cloud Atlas, because he played like, you know, 17 characters in Cloud Atlas, just like everybody else. Just all that, the way he talks, the way he speaks everything as if it is some sort of comedic pronouncement, you know,
very enunciate-y, yeah.
Very ring yeah. Mastery. I like it. The point of the thing.
A man who has never set foot out of England, circling the globe. This is going to be rather amusing.
History won't remember your amusements, Lord Kelvin.
But it will be hard-pressed to forget the moment I'm standing on the very top step of the Royal Academy of Science. By the strike of noon, after I, Phileas Fogg, have traveled around the world in 80 days.
Okay, we're supposed to be impressed.
Setting the stakes.
Roll credit.
Scorching me, Willie.
You're going to play if it's scorching me, Willie.
I just had to get that. I got a real treat for you guys here in a minute. Happy Schwarzenegger.
Well, let's make this brief. I will post a few photographs, perhaps wearing a turban, holding an atlas.
So, how magical that our path should cross.
Do you believe in fate?
Is that what you call it? One stops a moving train and kidnaps its passengers?
Phileas Fogg, please forgive me, but I feel like Aphrodite herself descended to Earth.
Now, I am not sure who convinced Arnie to do this, because he wasn't playing exactly to type.
Not even a little bit.
If memory serves, this was the first role post-mayor.
I guess the other way around. It was the last movie before he was elected governor, because he was elected. He was governor in the late 2000s.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
I knew it was at one end or the other, but yeah. I couldn't remember which.
Yeah, so just a brief appearance. He knows what kind of payday he took home for it, I guess, huh? But he was funny.
It was to fund the campaign.
He was a funny choice in the role. I mean, it was a little ridiculous.
I think that's the most enunciated I've seen Schwarzenegger, too.
Now here's the thing. Was it funny or was it offensive? I mean, it was so patronizing.
Yeah, obviously it was supposed to be, wasn't it? And again,
I mean,
okay.
Realistically, that area of the globe is kind of patronizing.
Still, obviously.
Yeah.
But then again, that's one of those questions you hold up to today and go, does this still work today?
Not really.
You know, as comedy.
An Austrian bodybuilder.
Play a Turkish prince.
Put on a Turkish afro. Like, what? It just hurt.
I love the fact that because they had him doing that lilty delivery, most of his accent disappeared. So, you know, weird choice.
Yeah, I was kind of confused for that exact reason. I mean, whose idea was it to take an actor who's mostly renowned for his Austrian accent and have him play a Turk?
And then
is a good idea?
Just to somehow sound less foreign, have a delivery where his accent largely disappears. I think that's kind of a strange choice. It's not like anybody didn't know who Arnold Schwarzenegger was in 2004. I did get a kick out of his whole thing with the statue, though. That was funny. The scene wasn't, but the thing with the statue was funny. Again, I think that the writing wasn't necessarily all the problem. The script wasn't necessarily all the problem. It was a lot of choices that were made in making the movie.
I'm trying to channel my inner Hemsworth here. Was it, though?
Let's see. Beef-related entree?
Yes. Brilliant, Lord Salisbury. I shall name a beef-related entree after you in your honor. Kitchener!
Sir.
Inform your men at Scotland Yard that Phileas Fogg is without a doubt the man who robbed the Bank of England. Where are they now?
Dun, dun, dun.
They're taking a train across India from Bombay to Calcutta.
Thank God we own India.
That line! I cringe so hard!
This was very much in the era of the sun doesn't set on the British Empire, so...
Thank God we own India.
Sigh.
I just got a couple more. Queen Kathy.
Your Majesty, I have just apprehended the culprit who robbed the Bank of England.
No, oh, Majesty, no!
Stop it! No.
What?
I love being able to do that. So, Lord Kelvin, unsportsmanlike conduct, attempted murder, trading my arsenal for Buddhas.
How do you know about that? I never said.
Admit it. You've been a naughty boy, haven't you?
I like Kathy Bates.
Naughty.
You could have her do anything, and I'm fine.
I do like Kathy Bates, and she was a good choice for Queen Victoria.
Yeah, I thought she was a fun selection there.
She does awesome in American Horror Story, but I can't imagine like half of you watching that.
I can't imagine watching American Horror Story either.
She does awesome
I love
in that
American
series.
Horror Story.
I believe that.
I have not made it that far in American Horror Story. It's hard for me to watch it. But she's been kicking around in movies for a long time. I try to remember the first place I remember seeing her was Misery, maybe.
I was going to say, my first real attachment to Kathy Bates was Misery.
She
was amazing.
A difficult movie, but she was good. Oh my God. I'm sorry. I almost missed that, didn't I? Let me see. Who cares? That's what I call this one. Who cares?
I'm sorry, Phileas.
Don't be, my chérie. I saw the world. I learned of new cultures. I flew across an ocean. I wore women's clothing. Made a friend. Fell in love. Who cares if I lost a wager?
I do. I've got 20 quid riding on you.
Oh, my God. The reactions to that. All very on brand, though.
Right. Right.
I mean, 20 whole quid.
Right. And the queen with all, yes, 20 quid.
I loved the fact that by the time he was in America, everybody knew who he was. People were celebrating him. People were, you know, people were betting on him all over the world.
But they were getting in his way. Yeah. All of these people are rooting for him, but they're stopping him.
Well, some of them might have been betting against
him. They're slowing him. No, but everybody that talks to him and says, I have to meet you because I've got this writing on you.
To be fair, anytime I meet someone that's bettable, I pretty much tell them I'm betting on them, whether or not I betted against them or not. I mean, come on.
You're still betting on them, even if you're betting against them, just saying.
Bettable.
In the Wright Brothers, maybe.
Bettable. Bet. Get your head out of the pillow.
Is there an actual word that's supposed to substitute in for that?
I also got to say that there's kind of an analog there to the whole celebrity experience, you know, because it's difficult for celebrities to go about their lives, their jobs, and their purpose from day to day without being harangued, without people being in the way.
Well, that's perfectly true.
But this was 100 years before the paparazzi even existed.
Right. Right. That's why, I mean, I said analog, you know, but it's not like, you know.
And it's one thing if I run across a celebrity and I'm enamored by them and I stop to say, hey, I just want to take a moment and invite you to dinner because I really like what you do and I know you have to have dinner at some point. That's different. You know, it's like when you take a break from filming, come by my place for dinner. Not, you're in the middle of a race. In 4 hours, come to dinner at my house. And then we'll have a nice, slow, leisurely dinner, and then I'll let you get back on your way in the middle of your race.
That's a little like Prince Hoppy, right?
Like Prince Hoppy. Like, it seemed that it happened like in the Chinese village. It's like, oh, I guess we can take a day here. No, leave. Go. I know it was some of the best scenes in the movie when they stopped, but leave. Go. Again, that's part of where I get the whole around the world in 72 days.
That's fair.
And keep in mind, this was a character who had produced a tiny little manual complete with graphs and charts to maximize the efficiency of his day-to-day business.
Exactly. This guy, and this is a guy who had memorized the schedules of every shipping lane, train, and everything around the world, even though it didn't make any difference to him because he'd never left England. That he could easily make the boast of getting around the world in 80 days in the beginning. That's what led to that. Because he said, I'll take this boat, and then you'd take this train, and then you'd get on this boat, and then you'd take this train. One could easily cross the world in 80 days. And everybody just laughed at him because he's a fool, and how could he possibly know these things? And yet, it just...
Right, but then obviously Jackie Chan's character was high charisma and got that to happen too, for his own means.
I have a fix supercut. I think I'll save it for the end, you guys.
Oh, yes, there must be a fix supercut. We have to talk about Inspector Fix.
Yes. You guys want to talk about him now?
Great.
We haven't talked about him much yet.
He is the MVC this movie.
So Ewan Bremner is particularly memorable from, like I mentioned before, Trainspotting. Most every time I see him in something, he's there because it seems like he's hired because of his delivery, you know, of the way he relates, the way he communicates to the camera or for the camera. He's very unique. He's also got a unique look to him too, but you know, whatever. I think he's banked on it pretty well in the last several years. But this character was easily Jackie had some great scenes, but Fix was over the top, the most ridiculous, funny thing in the movie.
Yes.
Yes.
And
a great amount of slapstick.
You got to wonder if it's one of those situations where they hire him for a role and they put him in a scene. And after the scene, they look at each other and go, he needs more scenes.
You know, I probably oh, I can't remember their names, but there were a pair of actors that were in a lot of classic Disney films. There was a short, rotund guy and a tall, skinny guy that showed up together and just kind of slapstick routined their way through every scene they were in.
You're not thinking of Laurel and Hardy, are you?
No, okay. I'm not, but I'm pretty sure that's who they were based on.
The model for it, right.
The only scene that I can bring to mind right now was from in Babes in Toyland.
Oh, well.
I know who you're talking about, and they were usually the villains.
Yes. I can't remember any movies where they weren't. They were usually minions or lackeys of the main bad guy, and they were just hilarious. And he really reminded me of both of them, quite honestly. And I wish I could remember their names.
I'm looking up Babes in Toyland
I absolutely
now.
Loved it.
Oh, gosh, I remember these just by looking at them.
See? I knew you would.
See if I can think of the name. I don't remember who was who, though. So looking at a list of actors doesn't help. Anyway, if anybody can figure that out.
It's later. Okay. You said that description, and all I can think of is 101 Dalmatians, and that was animated.
They played Rodrigo and Gonzorgo, I think. So let's see. That would have been, I'm good at this,
Henry Calvin and Gene Sheldon.
Yep. Wow. What a pull, dude. Freaking Babes in Toyland.
But I loved those guys. I looked for them in all the old Disney movies. I always loved it when they had an appearance. And their comedy very much is what he reminded
Zorro.
Me of.
Zorro.
Yes. Yes. Zorro was one of my favorites.
They were the policemen in Zorro.
Definitely. Let's see. You guys want to do that other thing? Or do we want to do the... Do you want to do the supercut?
Do the supercut, and then we'll do the thing.
Okay. Here's supercut, then. Everybody strap in.
But I'm afraid I'm going to have to detain you and your valet until further notice. See, this here doohickey is in violation of the city's new vehicle code.
Vehicle code?
Code 431. All vehicles must be powered by horses or other indigenous quadruped creatures of the like, excluding giraffes. Fox Valet! A Jade Buddha!
This is not a Jade Buddha.
Oh, yes, it is.
You're right, but I'm not a valet.
Oh, really? Bloody nose! Let me in! You're gonna pay for school, Jimmy, really?
Ah, darling, what can I do for you, eh?
Break down the door! My brains! My brain's leaking!
You know, it's kind of sad, but listening to that supercut felt like a quick review of the best parts of the movie.
Right.
It
did point out how much slapsticky sound bites were also included in the fight.
I had to leave some of that in there. It was so good. And you can visualize it. Cool. Even if you can't remember exactly what happened, suddenly you're seeing it.
Yeah, plus, exactly. It's very well orchestrated.
Yeah, that's good. It's all good. Let's give this a shot. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Rich.
All right. So thumbs down. I adored most of the quirks of this movie. It is really hard for me to pick a thumbs down, but I'm sure other people have choices. If I had to nail down something, I would probably pick the transition effects. While they did convey the fantasy adventure journey of the movie, to me, they were just a little bit too glammy and sparkly. I don't know. That is really hashtag no real negatives. I don't know. There was a very lame negative. But.
That was Jason's. It's pretty.
My negative was his positive.
I was
going to
say he stole my one thumbs up as his one thumbs down.
And I thought the rest of the movie was better than that. Thumbs up. Overall, the mix of cultures was well done. I thought a lot of thought was put into the visual. And I wasn't surprised given the talent, but I really did appreciate the way some of the stories were written culturally. At the end, I felt the story was solid. It plays well, feels fresh. I really enjoyed the adventure and the Jackie Chan-ness of the movie. And I regret not having seen it before a week ago. 2 weeks ago, whatever. And I'm giving it 5 stars.
Nice. I didn't even realize this was a first viewing for you, this recent thing.
Yes.
That sounds awesome.
Yes, I really regret the movie I watched instead of it way back in the... Yes.
Oh, which was... we talked about it, right? Was it Dodgeball or something?
Yeah, I watched Dodgeball instead.
I'm sorry.
I like Dodgeball. I liked it better than this. Vanessa?
Well... My big negatives, we're going to start with thumbs down this time. My big negatives, the movie was longer than it had to be. The stops of the different countries could have been chopped off a lot. I loved the transitions, but that's a whole other thing. We'll get to that. And honestly, I loved the cameos, but some of them felt forced.
Well.
Arnold was a very forced cameo.
Yeah.
Wilson Brothers was a forced cameo. I loved them. They were very forced. The story, because of how many stops they did and the way they did it, it felt choppy. That being said, thumbs up. I thought it was pretty. I loved the transitions. I thought the transitions were some of the best parts of the movie. I thought they were a great way to get from this point to this point to this point to this point. And they helped explain where we were in the journey and where we were time-wise. And I appreciated that and I liked it. And Jackie Chan, I love Jackie Chan. I love the way he does stunt choreography. I love the way he does his fighting. Just, it was very Jackie Chan. And I loved that. I have loved Jackie Chan since I saw him in Legend of Drunken Master. I will always love Jackie Chan. If he manages to mess something up, I will then start not liking him as much. But I haven't seen him mess up yet. Overall, 4 stars. Not going to go 5, because there were things that I didn't like. But 4, solid.
Cool. Jason, would you care to give us your very, very abbreviated dissertation?
It will be abbreviated.
I will not.
Plus stars. I did think that it was pretty. I thought it was shot well. I thought the cinematography was great. The scenery was beautiful. I enjoyed the cuts and the transitions. I thought they were sparkly and beautiful for all the right reasons, instead of being sparkly and beautiful for all the wrong ones. But I, too, love Jackie Chan movies. And we are now on to some thumbs down. And I love his choreography, and I love his fighting and styles and things. But this was a comedy that wasn't funny. It was an adventure that was boring. And it was a romance that was flat and needless. Everything that this movie tried to be, in my opinion, it failed at. It was not enjoyable. It was a hard watch. I would be pained to watch it again personally. And it's going to get 1 star because it was slightly better than Conan.
Wow.
You did remind me of one other point that I forgot to mention on mine. I liked the romance in this one. It was well paced.
Oh, that's weird. I don't have a sounder for that. That is so weird. Well, you know what? You're going to get it anyway. Jason, our kid, what do you think?
Okay. My major thumbs down was actually pretty early in the movie in Paris. I was super hyped and excited to see Thomas Edison. It was a no-show. My disappointment was immeasurable and my day was ruined.
Eddie Tomlinson?
I was overall, this is thumbs up. Overall, I was a little baffled at first what Jackie Chan was doing in my Jules Verne movie. And then I realized it was not, in fact, a Jules Verne movie. And for a little bit, I wasn't sure how I felt about that. But by the time the movie was over, I knew exactly how I felt about that. And it was a fantastic Jackie Chan movie. I give it 4 stars.
Wow. Okay.
Well, yeah, Owen Wilson was in it.
Yeah.
You wow. said wow.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Not only did you say wow, you said wow.
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 So how bad is your rating, Eric?
Gosh, I'm a little torn, I admit. So I don't, you know, I'm the guy that doesn't get into it a bunch for a lot of obvious reasons, I think, on the show. Because I like almost everything so much that it's really hard for me to... It's really hard for me to tear anything down. So, you know, what's the point? And you guys cover all the points very well. And I really feel a lot of what you guys are saying. And I really like the energy from the people that really enjoyed the film and what you really enjoyed about it. I've obviously made it clear that I was disappointed, but it wasn't just disappointment. It was apathy. And I don't know why. And I wondered if maybe if I watched it on a different day, maybe I was just tired. I don't know, you know. I've been busy lately. I don't know. But then again, like I said, I didn't remember it from the first time I watched it either. And I'm pretty sure I never had a real strong desire to rewatch it. Something about it doesn't speak to me. But I do think the movie, I don't think the movie was bad because it didn't appeal to me. You know, and that's, I think, a lot of what it comes down to. I think that something in the way it was paced and processed, I didn't like and didn't speak to me, and it didn't work. But it was pretty. It obviously speaks to other people. I'm giving it 2.5 stars.
Wow.
That is a low rating for you. Wow.
If you had 1 point up, you know, half point up, it would have been at 3.5 stars, but because you went down to 2.5, it actually made it a 3.25. Still rated as a good movie. Definitely seems like the factor is, if you want to see a Jackie Chan slapstick movie, you should enjoy that.
The other thing is, it was really hard to decide whether, because I don't have any desire to see it again, but like if my child came up to me and said, you know, hey, I saw Jackie Chan was in a Jules Verne movie, which all that is over his head right now. But if he did, I wouldn't say, no, I won't sit through that again.
Right.
I would just be playing on my phone. You know, so there you go. It's not the worst thing ever. I've seen the worst thing ever.
I've probably seen this movie like a dozen times, if not more.
And Vanessa makes up for my ambivalence, so we're good.
Yeah.
All right, I already played the supercut, didn't I? So I guess we'll go ahead and wrap up. What do we have? What's on the docket? What are we doing next week?
Real Steel.
Real Steel with Mr. Jackman. Huge Ackman. That'll be fun. That's good. Have you guys seen it? Who's seen it?
Ack.
Nope. I have not.
Is this going to be a first time?
I have seen it.
No clue.
You have kid?
Just recently, actually, for the first time. And I am looking forward to a second viewing.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. It's fun, family friendly kind of fun. But, you know.
It's robots beating up robots. I mean.
Yeah.
What's not to like?
Yeah, there. That's the words right there. All right. Go ahead and let us know if there's anything you'd like us to watch. You can drop us a line at feedback@prismatictsunami.com. You can join our Discord server, find the link in the show notes, and head on over anytime you like and talk about what you heard on the show. If you want to send us an email or, you know, bring anything up, we'll be sure to discuss it. We'll go over it. We may read your email on the show. Whatever it takes to get you to engage with us, you know, for the most part, we're pretty good with. Please do that, though. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And, you know, we're always looking for good ideas, you know, because we've got a list. It wasn't hard. We're only, you know, we're not even 30 episodes into this show. We've got a list, but...
Hundreds. We have hundreds in our list.
If nothing else, you will help narrow it down. Feel free to poke suggestions at us. I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here for today. Thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Exposition Street. Will everybody remember to watch Real Steel for next week? Is that on Netflix? I think it's on Netflix.
Yes, Netflix.
Awesome. And we'll see you then. For Rich, for Vanessa, for Jason and the kid, I'm Eric. Everybody have a fantastic day.